VWB is brought to you by OneStar. OneStar is the newest craze in the drive share industry. OneStar knows it's tough out there and side hustles are a must. So OneStar is dedicated to granting more jobs than any other driving service. You don't even need a driver's license or a background check to drive for OneStar. Don't believe me? Let me read some of these reviews. Bill from California writes, "The driver had Confederate flag seat covers, but he wore a mask the whole time. One star." Tristan from New York writes, "My driver was eating a bowl of spaghetti the whole time, but knew a shortcut. One star." Hector from Arizona writes, "My driver had a candy dish, but all the candy was wet. On the plus side, I found a cell phone under the seat. One star." So go to the App Store on your phone and download the One Star app today and start driving for cash now. That's One Star. Sit down, ride hard. What? Is that the phrase? Is that a typo or something? Okay, hold on. Sit down and ride hard. One Star. What the fuck? VWB is brought to you by AHS. AHS has been a family-owned business since 2001. Are you tired of getting those late-night notifications from your door cam when a bird or a Dracula passes by? With Asian Home Security, a real-life Asian person will patrol the perimeter of your home to prevent and deter any unwanted intruders. Our Asians are here to solve any problem. By Asian means necessary. AHS offers three tiers: the Golden Child tier, the popular Bolo Premium tier, and their bestseller, the Mr. Miyagi system. So go to ahs.com/VWB for details and subscriptions. Veterans with Benefits is brought to you by Gray Sweatpants. When you want to make everyone around you uncomfortable, it's Gray Sweatpants. Found in all major retailers and your depressing uncle's bottom drawer. Veterans with Benefits is proud to partner with Omni Consumer Products to bring you the first energy drink for the LGBTQ+ community. When you need a pick-me-up for the day-to-day grind and feel fabulous, reach for a Gatorade. It's delicious hot or cold. It goes both ways. Gatorade is the only energy drink that has real honest-to-God glitter in the can. You're definitely going to want to swallow this stuff. Gatorade comes in three fabulous flavors: Rainbow Raspberry, They Them Tropical Punch, and Lesbian Lemon Lime. So go out to the store and grab a Gatorade today and visit Gatorade.com. That's GAYDORADE.com. Then go delete your browser history. My guest this week had his wisdom teeth put back in his mouth. Let's find out how. Yo, buddy, what's up?
Hey, how are you?
Good, man. Appreciate you doing the show.
Of course. Yeah, sorry. I was trying to connect with my phone and it was acting weird, so I had to jump on the computer.
Yeah, either one works better. The only reason I was going to warn you about the phone thing is sometimes if you cut off this screen on your phone, it'll cut us off.
Ah, gotcha.
Because I've had guys use their phones to record, and you know they're sitting there while we're talking, fucking around on Facebook or Instagram, and we lose the call.
Ah, gotcha.
Yeah. So let's start off. Why don't you give everybody home listening a little bit of your origin story, where you grew up and shit?
Yeah, so I'm from a small town about 45 miles away from Chicago in Illinois.
Chicago.
I grew up in this small town, and it was before 9/11 when I enlisted. I kind of just wasn't ready for college. Didn't know what I wanted to do. Figured the military would help me figure that out. It didn't, but I thought it was going to.
Now explain, because I have a lot of civilian listeners. Now okay. explain that statement to them. you didn't know what you wanted to do, and you thought the military was going to help you.
Yeah. So, I wasn't ready for college. I knew I wasn't going to go to college. I figured, I didn't have what it took to make it in college. So I did the delayed entry program when I was 15 years old. And by the time I actually joined, right before I turned 18, my parents had to sign for me to get in. I already had already got four people to enlist with me. Funny story, out of the four people that I got to enlist, the only person that made it through basic training was my sister. Everyone else either got kicked out or bailed or moved or whatever because they either didn't think they could hack it or they actually couldn't when they were in basic. But yeah, so I got in the military just thinking that an extra 4 years would help me kind of grow up and figure out what I wanted to do with my life.
Yeah. And people that don't go through that experience, they don't realize what kind of anxiety and stress, like especially I remember I wasn't super stressed out when I got to basic, but I was stressed out the whole time going there. When
Okay.
you're sitting on the plane, then you're sitting on the fucking bus, and then you're sitting in this terminal waiting to get picked up, and you're just like fucking sweating, like what the fuck did I do? What did I sign up for? And then when you get off, when you get and you meet your TIs and shit, it's just you're moving so fast, you don't even have time to fucking think about anything.
I remember when I got off the bus to basic training. I wasn't really there yet. Nothing really bothered me up until that point. I knew what I wanted to do. I knew I wanted to go in the military. It wasn't until after I got off the bus and the drill sergeants got right in your face and started screaming. Then it was kind of like watching a movie. Like I wasn't actually there. Like I was kind of withdrawn, kind of like watching a show. I wasn't really there. It was very weird, and it kind of I was in that fog for a little while where it didn't
Yeah.
really feel like reality.
I was watching some videos with my son on YouTube about basic training. And there's all these like guys on the bus, waiting. And there's always that one dude who's like got like all this army gear on and shit, like t-shirts and hoodies. I'm like, don't be that guy. I was like, that's who they look for. I was like, just be a dude in a white t-shirt and blue jeans. I was
Oh
like,
yeah.
be invisible.
Oh yeah. If they find out that you're a legacy or your family was in the military or your family's still in the military, yeah, you're gonna get
Yeah.
it.
So, when you went in, did you have an MOS ready waiting for you, or do you get your MOS after boot camp?
Yeah, so the way that it worked for me was I knew I was gonna go in. I just had a girlfriend at the time when I was about to leave for the army. So I told them I really didn't care what job I was going to get as long as I could have this summer to hang out with her. So they
They
finally,
laughing so hard at you, dude.
yeah. I was like, I don't care what job, just give me something that's with computers. And I just want to leave in August. And they picked out a multi-channel transmission systems operator. I didn't know what the hell that was. If I would have read the description, I didn't touch a computer the whole 4 years I was in.
Damn.
I was a signal corps, so I worked on like antennas that kind of shot into the troposphere. So I guess I did really good on my ASVAB. I don't recall what I got, but I guess for that job you have to have a pretty high ASVAB score. So I probably could have done a whole bunch of different jobs, but I let them choose for me.
You're lucky you didn't end up as an MP. That's what
Yeah.
happens in the Air Force. When they say, just give me whatever, you're going right into security forces.
That's what my sister was. She was a military police investigator.
Yeah. I mean, I tell people that all the time. Don't let it up. Don't give it up to them. The recruiters will just screw you.
Oh yeah, in retrospect, that was a dumb move on my part for sure.
Yeah. So, being like in the Army, so what was it about the Army that you chose to be a soldier? Like you didn't have any like aspirations to be a Marine or a sailor?
No, I just went straight for
Yikes.
the best. I'm just kidding.
We're 6 minutes in, brother.
My grandpa was a sailor first, and then he went into the army. And So I just, my dad enlisted in the army. My grandpa was in the army. I followed suit.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I did the exact opposite. I was all my relatives were either sailors or Marines, and I was like, you know what? I want to try something else. So I picked the Air Force because I thought it sounded cool.
Yeah, for sure. I think we talked about that a little bit. I was like, oh, you're one of the smart ones.
Yeah, no, there's trust me, the Air Force is a lot of dummies. They got brooms in the Air Force too, dude. That someone's got to push them.
I got you.
Yeah. So you get out of so when were you actually you came in 2000?
I went in 2001. I actually went in August of 2001. So I was in basic training when 9/11 happened.
Yeah, what year did you graduate high school?
What year? 2001.
Okay. My little brother graduated in 2001. So you came in a month before 9/11. So what was it? So what were they when 9/11 happened, what did they tell you guys?
Yeah, so I think everybody, it's kind of one of those things like when JFK died, and for my parents, you know where you were exactly when you were told what happened or when you saw it. I didn't see a TV, obviously. You know how basic is. But I was doing area beautification, and for the civilians out there, it's basically just like putting lines in the dirt or painting rocks or doing just easy tasks for no reason, just to stay busy. That's kind of what we were doing. And so I was edging the street, making sure the grass didn't get too close to the street. And
God bless America.
the first sergeant came, and he was like, we're under attack. And he started explaining what was going on, and then he rushed everyone that was outside to go get weapons and put gear on. I'm 18. I think I just turned 18. We get rushed over to put gear on and get our weapons, and then they had us stand guard and things like that at the gates. I don't know what they assumed was going to happen. I was at Fort Knox at the time, Fort Knox, Kentucky. But yeah, that's what happened. I actually didn't see the planes hit the towers until the next year. I mean, because I went straight from basic training to my schooling, which we call AIT, advanced individual training, something like that. So I went to Georgia for that, and I had 36 weeks of training to learn how to do my job. So I didn't even see that until excuse me, I didn't even see the planes hit on until it was on YouTube. And when I was living in Germany at the time, was the first time I saw that happen.
Jesus,
So,
that must have been years later, dude.
yeah.
Yeah, fuck. I'm thinking like 2001. There was no YouTube, because I remember I was driving home, and I was listening to Howard Stern, and I remember there just being like him announcing it, and then there being cars pulled over, like listening to the radio, and like I got home just in time to see that second t tower get hit on TV. Like, it was crazy.
It's a weird position being on the one end and then hearing how people dealt with everything on the other end. Like just like the Iraq War, being in Iraq, I didn't see the news. I mean, obviously, we didn't have TVs and things like that when I was living in Iraq. But I can't imagine what the people over here saw. Like I've never even seen what they saw, so it's got to be different, a different perspective and everything.
It definitely reminded me of like what happened with the coronavirus, like because I try to explain to my kids what it was like, and I was like, it was like this. So I was like, it was just 9/11, 9/11, 9/11, like on all the time on the news. It was like nothing else but 9/11, like every angle. It was fucking nutty. Like it was just like this shit you see, that we saw for the last 2 years about coronavirus online all the time, just barraging you with fucking information. But it was the same information, just, colored a different way.
I remember when we couldn't see any planes in the sky. That was
That
nutty.
was freaky. I remember that too. Yeah, that was
That
freaky.
eerie calm was so weird.
Yeah, that was freaky as shit. So, when you get out of your tech school or whatever, where do they send you first?
So after I was in so I went from Fort Knox to Fort Gordon, Georgia. I was in Georgia for a while. It was a lot of fun. And then From there, they shipped me out to Darmstadt, Germany. So I was in Germany for about a year and a half, or about a year or so before they sent me over to Iraq.
Okay. So never being over there, what was a big culture shock for you when you got to go over to Iraq?
To Iraq or Germany?
To Iraq.
Oh, to Iraq. It was a little weird. Even building up to going to Iraq, they were trying to get as many people as possible to go to Iraq without trying to run for it. And so they were trying to fool us on the way to even getting ready to go to Iraq. So they had us all packed up. That we only had a couple of bags. Everything else has been packed up already and on trucks. And they kept telling us to, it'd be midnight. We'd get a call and we'd have to meet at the gymnasium with our two bags. And then they'd be like, all right, it was just practice, go back. And they kept doing that because so we never knew exactly when we were going to leave. And the one time that we went there and it wasn't practice and everyone lined up, it was really weird. I'm sure you experienced something similar. We had some people that actually ran, so they were deserters that just dropped their stuff and ran. That was
Really?
weird. But then we also, they would pick out people from the line and show them how to use the needle gun so that we can get immunizations. And they would just line us up and just give us shot after shot after shot. And it's like you ask the person, what am I getting? And the person's like, ah, they just pulled me out of line. So I was trying to tell people when they were freaking out about the coronavirus having to take this the vaccine. I was like, I've got so many things in my body that I don't even know what they are. This thing isn't going to affect me.
Oh yeah, I mean, I didn't get out. I got out in 2017. I'm pretty sure I'm immune to every virus there is,
Oh,
because
yeah. Yeah. Living in Germany and having to go to Iraq, I mean, we have smallpox vaccines. They thought anthrax was going to be a big deal. I've got a couple of anthrax vaccines, got a whole bunch of stuff.
yeah, who knows what the hell they put in our bodies?
Oh, yeah.
We're the test dummies for all that shit.
Oh yeah. So then when we went to Iraq, it was we had to ride on a commercial flight. So that was interesting. It was a two floor airplane, and all of us were in our gear. I had a machine gun and a grenade launcher on me, and we had regular stewardess or flight attendants. That was a little weird. And they had everyone shut their windows, and then I peeked, and you could see the fighter jets or whatever they were called, like kind of trying to get into trying to get in the country with us at the same time. We flew into Kuwait, so I mean we were in Kuwait for a couple of weeks before we crossed over in March 2003. So
Okay.
we were in Kuwait, and I don't know what they showed on the news over here, but they were really adamant about making sure that we had our mop gear on, and we had to have our mop gear on all the time. So we had our uniforms on, and then we had our mop gear on top of it. I think I lost 30 pounds within a couple of weeks. I mean, I was just losing weight like crazy because you had the wool suit on, the wool camo on, and then you had the charcoal lined mop gear. And you we every time anything went in the sky, we had to put our masks on and our gloves and our boots and everything. It was crazy.
Damn it, I remember, maybe not for you guys, but the Air Force had like this little like jingle for the mop gear. I forget what the fuck it was. It was so stupid and childish, but like that's what they would say, like, the order you put your mop gear on. Damn it. Anyone listening to this that was in the Air Force that knows that fucking jingle, please comment that fucking song. It was so stupid. It was something like gloves, boots, like, God damn it, I wish I could remember that fucking thing.
I don't think we had something like that. I think we just got yelled at if we didn't do it quick enough.
No, it was the Air Force, dude. If you got it done fast enough, you got an extra brownie in your dinner. So how long were you in?
In the military, I was in
Yeah.
for 4 years.
Okay, you did four and out. You were one of the good ones.
So
Okay.
yeah, I did four. I got hurt in Iraq, I got a couple of TBIs when I was in Iraq, traumatic brain injuries. And then when I got back, they flew me out to Texas, and I was supposed to be with 1st Cav, and they were going right back to Iraq. And I don't know if I should tell the story or not, but I'll do it anyway. So I just got back from Iraq and I spent almost a year over there. Stop loss happened, so everyone that was supposed to be going to a different duty station was stuck in Iraq for an extra 6 months or so. I don't know if we were troublemakers or what, but there was a handful of us that for some reason got through stop loss. And so we ended up getting sent to different duty stations. So I got sent to Texas and I was supposed to go right back to Iraq for a year. And I wasn't opposed to it. I just, I spent three out of 3 years basically, or a little shy of it, living in other countries. I wanted to see how it was going to be in the United States before I figured out if I wanted to re-enlist or not, And so I get to Texas and I went to a strip club for their lunch special.
Sure you did.
And there was a sergeant major there w in uniform. And I went up to him and asked him what the patch was. I didn't know. I've never seen this patch before. It was 4th Infantry Division. It looks like a clover, kind of. And I asked him about it and he's like, "Where are you going, soldier?" And I said, "First Cav." He's like, "You ready to go to war?" And I was like, "Shit, I just got back." And he's like, "Did you get in trouble? Why are you going back? Why are you doing two tours in a row?" I was like, "I have no idea." And he was like, "Come see me tomorrow." So I went to go see him in his office. He pulled my social. He made sure I wasn't ever in trouble on paper. And then he was like, "Come be a soldier for me." And he moved me over to 4th ID. So I didn't have to do two tours back to back. Like I said, I wasn't opposed to it. I was more so wanting to see how it was going to be in the United States, because the being in the military in Germany was amazing. Absolutely amazing. It was a lot of fun. I mean, obviously you can imagine, you're only a handful hours away from France and Amsterdam and a whole bunch of other places, and you can drink in cars and drink in buses and drink on the train, and it was a lot of fun for an underage kid,
Oh, I bet, man. Yeah, that's the only place I didn't get to go to. I was in for 12 years and I never got to go to Europe. I had a couple opportunities, but due to my let's say mouth, I wasn't allowed to go to some places.
Sure.
I would do one time I would I've told this story before. I was literally told by one of my superiors one time, "You will never deploy with us ever again."
That's awesome.
And that was true to the till the day I left that base. They sent me somewhere. They never wanted to send me anywhere again.
All right. That's funny.
So what was it like transitioning out of the service and being a civilian again for you?
So I was supposed to get out on a medical discharge. So when I got to Texas, they submitted all my paperwork. I was supposed to be med boarded. And so I was supposed to go through a medical board, all that stuff. When I got hurt, I ended up getting on a whole bunch of profiles and I gained weight because, my drinking was still bad and my eating habits were bad and I stopped working out. So, like a lot of us used to drink very heavy and eat very bad, but then we'd run 5 miles in the morning and go work out throughout the day. So it kind of balanced out. And once you stop working out, I gained a lot of weight. And the captain in charge of my med board kept telling my superiors that he submitted all the paperwork and he never did. So I'm waiting and waiting for this med board, and it's getting closer for me to get out. Nothing's happening. So I told my I went home on leave, and I spoke to Donald Manzullo, which is a state representative for Illinois where I live. And told him what was going on, and within 24 hours, he sent a letter to Washington, D.C. It went all the way back to Fort Hood, and then I'm in the I don't know what he was called, but the guy in charge of all of Fort Hood, the commander in charge of all of Fort Hood. And I was in his office, and they did a little bit of looking into it, and I guess this old captain, was sitting on probably like 15 soldiers' paperwork to get him med boarded. He didn't do anything. He was just sitting in his office. He instead was trying to get him kicked out for not making tape, for being overweight.
Yeah, I've had buddies that fall into that.
So what ended up happening is he was forced into retirement, and the commander said, "We'll get you med boarded, but you're going to have to stay in for an extra 6 months because it's going to take a little bit of time, or you can deal with the VA. And now I'm a huge advocate for other vets, but at the time I didn't have anybody to turn to. I didn't have anybody to ask questions to, or I didn't really look into it, and I just said, fuck this. And I got out and I was like, I'll deal with the VA. I didn't know that I screwed myself out of so many benefits for not taking the med board. I think you probably know how that works. You get a certain amount of, you get your base pay for the amount of years that you served, and you automatically get VA benefits as soon as you get out. And it starts like the next month after you get out when you start getting paid from the VA. It took me 9 years to get help from the VA. And then by the time I got help, it was like 4 years of back pay that they owed me for PTSD and some other stuff.
Yeah, I mean that I mean we could have a whole episode of just of that, and because people don't realize, like, when you get out, unless you ask the questions, they're not gonna tell you. And especially with that VA stuff, they're not gonna help you do it. Like, once you're out and you're out of that club, they're not helping you, and nobody's calling you anymore, nobody's giving you any advice. It's you're just Joe Schmo.
So it's actually pretty cool. They just started something not too long ago, and some of my friends that are getting out now, because most of my friends that are my age are starting to retire from the military that stayed in, and they're starting a mentorship program. I don't know if you heard about this, but they're linking up service members that are just getting out with somebody that's either retired or spent a good amount of time like yourself in the military that could kind of like aid them into that transition and help them through that. So the military is starting to get into that because I think they see that they're failing so many people.
Oh, yeah.
But to answer your question, what ended up happening with me is 2 weeks after I got out, I started college. So I didn't, like I told you beginning when we first started talking, that I wasn't ready for school and I didn't think I could make it or hack it in college. After the military, I think any of my brothers and sisters out there can attest to this. After that, you feel like you can do anything. I felt like if I can make it through the military, going to war and all that stuff, I can go to school. So I started college 2 weeks later, and in high school I was the lower 5% of the bottom 5% of my graduating class with my GPA. But in college, I was in National Honor Society, and I actually went there to learn. I mean, I had a lot of fun too. It was just like the military with the amount of fun, but yeah, I busted my ass and I did really well in college. But that's when I found out I had PTSD. I didn't know I had it. So I went to the VA and said, "Hey, I think I have ADHD because I'm having a hard time focusing in class. I'm doing everything I need to. I'm sitting in front of the class. I'm trying, but I still am having a real hard time focusing." And they started asking me about how I drive at night. They're like, "Can you see halos around the lights when you're driving at night?" They started asking me about my sleeping habits and stuff like that. I was like, "My sleeping habits are fine. I sleep like everyone else. I sleep with my clothes on top of my bed. There's nothing weird about
Yeah.
that." And so they started telling me I had PTSD, and that's how they started trying to get me to go through and do the work, do trauma work and things like that. But I wasn't ready at the time.
Like what you were saying earlier about getting out, and like I can piggyback on this, because I was in the Air Force, dude. I didn't go to war. But when you get out, just being in, just surviving that environment of the military itself is a huge boost for for you, because you're like, yeah, everything else seems fucking easy compared to what I just did. You know what I mean? Like, just going through the motions of being in the military itself, you're like, oh yeah, working at Walmart, this is for fucking monkeys.
For sure.
So, you're out, you're in college. Where does the Road Home project come into play?
So it took me 9 years to get help, mental health help, and finally, after a failed marriage and things like that, I decided it was time for me to like actually face my issues. And I went to the VA. I did one of their programs. It was about 6 months or so, 3 days a week. I was working on it's called CPT, cognitive processing therapy, and it just going over like how everything I went through kind of affects my day-to-day life now. And I thought I was okay after that. I felt pretty good. I felt like I was getting everything under control. And then I started working for a nonprofit organization called Veterans Path to Hope in Illinois over here. They're in the Chicagoland area, and they help veterans that are either at risk of being homeless or homeless. And while I was working there, I realized that I wasn't mentally okay, even though I thought I was. You know, we had a handful of suicides in the same year. And then one of my friends that served in Iraq with me took his own life last year around this time. And that was like the straw for me. And I needed to talk to someone. And I reached out to the VA and said, hey, I need an intake. I need to do an intake. I need an outpatient treatment. I need help. And they had a 2-month waiting list for getting an intake. And I don't have anything bad to say about the VA. I love the VA. I've had really good experiences with them. But when you're in a dark place, you don't have 2 months.
No.
So I reached out to a friend, which is now my boss, but I reached out to my friend and said, hey, I need help. Within an hour, I got an intake. By the next morning, I started talking to somebody. And that was my introduction to the Road Home program. Road Home program is a nonprofit organization through Rush University Medical Center in Chicago. And they help veterans and their families with, you know, all the invisible wounds of war. So you're talking about PTSD, anxiety, depression. They also help with military sexual trauma. And I started talking to them and it really helped. And when I found out that there was a job opening, I jumped. I was like, I need to help vets like they helped me. And so then I got involved. So I took over the person that helped me. I took over her job and then she got promoted to manager position. So I'm an outreach coordinator for a whole bunch of different states. The main ones are like Wisconsin, Texas, Arkansas, and then Massachusetts and some other states. I've got about 10 states. We kind of had like a draft between the 5 outreach coordinators and, you know, picked our states. There were a couple that I really wanted that I didn't get, but for the most part, I got some real solid ones that help vets out a lot. So what I do for a living now is just reach out to organizations and try to get the word out as much as possible. In a very short, like snippet of what we do is, you know, we'll fly veterans out from anywhere in the country, even anywhere in different territories. We've flown out veterans from, you know, Puerto Rico, Guam, from Mexico, from Germany. We'll fly them out to Chicago for a 2-week intensive outpatient program, which is basically like 6 months of therapy in 10 days. And it's not inpatient. So it's not, you know, a lot of the members that are out there probably listening either don't want to be an inpatient or have been and don't like it. This is outpatient. So you have the nights off and you have the weekends off to kind of explore the city or just to hang out with your, you know, your new counterparts, you know, your new colleagues through the cohort. But it's amazing. They get people out of their comfort zone. I mean, you're doing individual treatment, group therapy, mindfulness, which I didn't even know what that was until I started working here. When they explained mindfulness to me, I was like, what is that? And they were like, well, most veterans care a lot about other people, but don't really care too much about themselves. And I was like, holy shit, you just hit the nail on the head right there.
Yeah.
I do so much for everyone else and I don't care about doing stuff for myself at all most of the time. So they do yoga, they do art therapy, which is amazing. Their art therapy program is absolutely amazing. They even do sleep hygiene and acupuncture. I mean, basically everyone learns different, everyone heals different, and they try all these different modalities in order to see which one would help the most. And then the second part of my job is to make sure that the service members, when they go back home, they're not flapping in the wind. They have something tangible to go back to. You know, they either have, you know, outpatient treatment set up still, or if they're into yoga and they want to find a yoga studio that will help them, you know, we try to help find them something to go home to continue with that care.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's sweet, dude. Yeah, I mean,
You can definitely, there's definitely been a shift in that kind of stuff with like our generation. It pertains to like, the mental illness factor of, being in the military. Like, you never heard about that shit like in the Vietnam era. Or even like, even in the non-war times with people like, could you imagine like being in the military in the 80s? Like, they didn't do, they probably hadn't to do shit. Like, they were just sitting around smoking cigarettes on the flight line all the time.
Oh yeah, I heard stories about before 9/11 that all the German posts were open. I mean, we used to have to sneak our girls on post. I mean, they just came to you beforehand.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean,
So.
just interviewed a guy that was like he was in Korea in 92, and I was in Korea in 2014. And I don't know if you've ever been to South Korea, but it's amazing.
Okay.
But I can't even imagine being there like in the 90s, where it was just like a fucking party 365 days a week.
Right.
Oh, yeah. So you're working there, and you also told me you wrote a book.
Yeah, so it's kind of funny. All this is really tied in together. So after my divorce, I have a son. He's 4 years old. He's gonna be 5 in January. In between getting help and things like that, I have sleeping problems, so I was laying there one night and looking at him, and I decided, there's not a lot of books out there for single dads with a son. And so I started writing a couple of little books, and and then that was like gonna be my side venture. I was like, I'm gonna start writing these real simple books, because one of my son's favorite books is just this book that's like, I love daddy. And it's like, my daddy swims with me. My daddy plays with me. It's like super simple. And I'm like, $12 I bought this book for. But I mean, it's worth it because it was one of his favorite books. And I was like, wow, I really need to get on this. And in my head, I was like, I'm just going to do this for him, so he has like something tangible when he gets older of like all the stuff that I want to tell him. And my friends are like, you need to publish these things. And I was like, well, maybe one day. And so what I do for a living, part of my job is to go and do like veteran expos, or we'll go to sporting events and set up tables and give out t-shirts and different things like that. Well, we went to the Chicago Wolves, which is like right under the Chicago Blackhawks in hockey, and we went there, and my son was with me, and he rides around on my shoulder still. And a lady that worked there was like, oh, you need to take your son in here and see the opening number. It's amazing. They spend a lot of money on this opening number. And it's military appreciation night. So I walk in there, I'm right in the front. And the pyrotechnics are going off. That was cool. And then they start with the fireworks. And it was like, over the years, I forced myself to go to fireworks. And now I can rationalize after getting help. I can rationalize the colors and things like that, and I know it's not anything of danger, but the white flash booms, those things mess with me, man. I can't get past them. And so he was on my shoulders. They started just going off and going off, and every time I flinched, I opened my eyes, those things were going off. First thing I tried to do was just, I was just trying to leave the situation. I just wanted to walk away. And my son was like, no, daddy, I want to watch it. So, as a dad, I was like, well, I got to deal with this shit. So I just like braced myself against the wall and just took it. And I walked back into the open area when my boss saw me, and she saw that I was visibly upset. So she came over, and she was talking to my son and asking him a whole bunch of questions while somebody got me something to drink. It was really nice. They took care of me. My boss is a three-time she did three tours in the Marines, and she's a badass. But she was really nice that day. And so I told my counselor, which I'm getting help at the vet centers, which is amazing. Those were started from the Vietnam era veterans, and I'm grateful for that stuff. It's still part of the VA, but it's like they don't have to talk to the VA, which is pretty awesome. And my counselor is fantastic. But I told him, I was like, hey man, I had a really bad panic attack, probably the worst one I had in 15 years. And my son was on my shoulders, and I'm like, I'm glad he just didn't see me struggle. I didn't want him to see me break down.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he shook his head, like kind of like, And I was like, what? And he's like, yeah, we'll talk about it. I was like, I feel like we need to talk about it right now. He's like, well, you need to figure out a healthy way to explain what you're going through to him. And I was like, how the hell do you explain like intrusive thoughts, panic attacks, fear, like just fear in general, like hypervigilance? How do you, all the, negative self-talk, all this stuff about PTSD, how do you explain it to a 4-year-old, Those are pretty dark subjects. And so I thought about it. I started writing some stuff down, and then I had a epiphany. I was like, I actually went to school with one other person that enlisted. Most of the people in my high school went to college and or didn't, but no, only a couple of us enlisted that I know of. They were in my class, and so he was in Iraq at the same time as me, and I didn't even know that. And he's an artist, so I reached out to him and was like, hey, this is what happened to me. This is why I'm writing this. I'm trying to explain this to my 4-year-old. Would you be willing to go in on this with me? So he said, hell yeah. And that's how it started. So we made the book. It's called Instead of Sheep. We're selling it on Amazon right now. It's it's for me, it was cathartic. I needed to do that. And it's really nice to hear from my military family out there that, they checked it out and it helped them explain some stuff to their kids. That's really all I was looking for, because there was one book out there about PTSD, because that's what I did first, was kind of look and see if I can find any books to help me explain what was going on. And there's one called Why Is Dad So Angry? And it doesn't resonate with me because I don't yell at my son.
That's a bad title, I feel.
What was that?
That's a bad title for a book, I think.
Yeah.
Why is
Yeah.
dad? Like nobody's, no kid's gonna pick that book up.
Yeah. And it doesn't really explain much. Not saying mine explains, but I mean, mine goes over all the different things I think PTSD is made out of, And one of the ones that was the hardest for me was the negative self-talk one. It shows a veteran looking in the mirror, and he sees like this beat up, like war-torn veteran, and his son's looking at him, and he sees a superhero. And I know that probably resonates with a lot of parents. Like, am I doing everything I can for my kid? Am I good? Am I a good parent? But they look past all that shit, and they think you're fantastic,
Yeah.
And so yeah, I mean, it's a really cool book. I'm glad I was able to make it with my friend. We were in kindergarten together, and just being able to do that with him. And then at the end, I talked about the importance of getting help, and just making sure that he knew that he could always ask me questions. And I think I'm going to do this every couple of years, kind of water it down a little less, and then maybe one day, be in a position to like tell him everything that happened,
Well, you know what would be a kind of a cool idea for these books? If you kept writing these books, age the kid up in the book every series. So then, like, towards the end, you're talking to a teenager, and then you're talking to a man. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's kind of the way I was thinking too,
Yeah, that'd be kind of cool because you know, like you could be like one of the books could be like him, like asking questions about, you know, enlisting, and then you can give that kid advice as a man to man, you know.
Hell yeah.
That'd be kind of cool. Yeah, I'd like to see that. That'd be cool. So let me ask you something. So let's say your son's, you know, in his 20s and he comes up to you and, you know, asks you like, you know, dad, you know, tell me a story about when you were in. What would you tell him? Like, what would you like if he just said, you know, not like not that he's at, not that he's fishing for like a war story, but like what's like a good memory you have when you were in the military? That always like, you know, brings a smile to your face, and it's like a story you like to tell.
Oh, that's a hard one. Yeah, I mean, probably the first day I got to Germany, it kind of explained how my entire time in Germany was going to be. So I got to Germany, and my first sergeant, I'm 18 years old. My first sergeant was like, "Hey, you came on a 4-day weekend. Here you go." And he gave me some rations, like a ration card for buying beer. So you only could buy a certain amount of beer. And so he gave me that. He's like, "This will get you at least a case or so." And then he took me around and started knocking on doors to see who was around to kind of show me around. But everyone was gone. It was a 4-day weekend. And he knocked on a door, and a guy answered, and he ended up being one of my best friends. And then I took a nap. I woke up, and there was another soldier sitting on top of my dresser, just waiting for me to get up, drinking. And he introduced himself. It kind of threw me off. I'm like, "Who the hell are you?" And he introduced himself, and he was my neighbor across the hall in the barracks. And he ended up being my best friend, and he died. But he made sure that all of his friends were like accepting of me and things like that. So it kind of took me under his wing. He was a little older than I was, and so all the people that he introduced me to, all the friends that were his friends that I ended up being friends with, are still friends with me. And he was a great guy. And so I would probably just explain to him kind of like that family dynamic, that camaraderie, the friendships that you build are pretty amazing in the military.
Oh yeah, because I mean, I still have buddies that I check in with every once in a while, just because you miss that when you get out.
Unfortunately, most of my stories involve drinking and things like that, so I'd probably st stray away from most of my stories with him until he's old enough to
Yeah.
kind of understand that stuff and not
Yeah.
judge.
You want to tell stories about Juicy Girls?
So
All right, man. So before we get out of here, I put everybody through a bonus round. So I need you to answer these questions to the best of your ability, sir.
okay.
Okay. What's your favorite movie?
Ooh, what dreams may come.
Okay. I like that movie. People shit on that movie because, he's got so many other better movies, but that movie's not bad. I like it.
I like it. I just like the idea of like there's the way that it happens, and that he would like give up everything for somebody he loves.
Yeah. Who's got the best French fries?
Best French fries. That's a good question. I like Arby's French fries. I always like the curly ones.
Hell yeah, dude. I'm so glad you didn't say McDonald's.
Oh no. I would take Wendy's or McDonald's.
Yeah. What was your favorite TV show growing up?
Well, when I was a little older, Sopranos was definitely my favorite movie. I mean, I remember driving down to Texas, and my friend and I drove down to Texas to Fort Hood, and we stopped, literally stopped, rented a hotel room just to watch Sopranos, and then kept driving. Like it was so important back then, and there was no way to like record it, like there was no streaming. So if you missed an episode, you had to wait till it came out, basically.
Holy shit. All right. We're the same age. I graduated in 2000.
Okay.
Okay. Name a conspiracy theory you believe.
Conspiracy theory, I believe. I don't know.
Like, you think aliens are real? You think JFK was shot by Bigfoot?
I don't know if aliens are real. I don't know if I've heard a lot of people say that they're not aliens. They're like interplanetary, what's it called? The interdimensional beings. I would believe that over an alien. I don't know if I believe that there's like other life on different planets. I don't know.
You don't think there's life on other planets?
I don't know. I'm
Dude,
not sure.
the vast amount of space there is, it's infinite. There's gotta be. I'm not saying they're like humanoids like us, but there's gotta be some kind of intelligent slime fucking pushing buttons, like I'm sure there's not on other planets there isn't fucking Kardashians, but there's gotta be something.
Right. I mean, there's definitely more than us, but I don't know exactly what it is.
I think whatever it is, if they showed up on Earth and people saw it, people would probably lose their minds.
Oh, for sure.
I think people go catatonic if we actually saw something. Like, I think that, you know, seeing stuff in the movies and on TV is not going to help us relate to whatever is out there.
I think agree to that, yeah. The
whole world will panic and, you know, shortly end once aliens touch the Earth. That's my take. That's my take. So, dude, before we get out of here, remind everybody about Road Home and tell everybody where they can find that book.
Yeah. So Road Home program is a nonprofit through Rush University Medical Center. And we help veterans, actually service members. So they could be active duty, National Guard, reservists, or veterans. And the most important thing to take away is that we help veterans of any status. So they could be dishonorably discharged. They don't even need to have a penny in their pocket. They don't have to have insurance. They don't have to be VA healthcare eligible. They can be pre-9/11 or post-9/11. We've had Korean War vets come through our program. So we can help veterans of any status, any discharge era, and it's at no cost to the veteran, and we'll fly them out to Chicago or pay for their train or pay for their gas to get them to Chicago. We pay for their food, we pay for their housing, we pay for everything, and then we send them back in a better place than they were. I think the most important numbers that we put out there is that over 80% of the service members that go through our program have a huge reduction in their PTSD, and over 50% don't even meet the criteria of having PTSD when they take that self-evaluation, when you go to the doctor and ask you those questions, you know, like how often do you think of hurting yourself or others, different things like that. You know, when you go to the doctor, they ask you all those questions. Well, we have you fill them out when you go there and then when you're about to leave. And over 50% don't even meet the criteria of having PTSD, which is absolutely incredible. But our program's life-changing. And if you want more information about the Road Home program, you can go to roadhomeprogram.org. And that would just take you to where it says get care. And you can do the intake. Or you can call our phone number at 312-724. Actually, that's not it. Sorry.
You just gave somebody their phone number.
It's on the website, but
motherfucker, I get this free trip to Chicago.
All right. Hold on. I'm going to make sure I'm giving the right number out. Oh, here we go. 312-942-8387. So that's 312-942-VETS. And so that'll get you right to the right place. And it's, like I said, it's an amazing program. For my book, that's called Instead of Sheep. And yeah, it's a children's book. It's for around like 4 to 7 year olds, somewhere around there. But really anybody that wants to explain PTSD to their kid, it's called Instead of Sheep, A Soldier's Way of Explaining PTSD to His Son. And it's the cover's a bear trying to sleep, and in his mind is, you know, like a pasture with sheep, you know how they jump over a fence, but the sheep end up turning into like Humvees and tanks and things like that. It's pretty cool. He did an awesome job illustrating, and yeah, hopefully it helps anybody out there with trying to open that communication up with your kids.
Sweet, man. That's awesome. I love to hear that kind of stuff. But yeah, dude. So I really appreciate you doing the show, man. When I release the episode, I'll give you a text, and I'll sure to be share all the links to your stuff when I post this.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem, dude. So, all right, man, that's it. That's pretty painless, right? You've done this before, right?
No.
No, this is your first, huh? You're a virgin. Not a virgin anymore, buddy.
For sure.
Yeah. So cool, man. Like, once again, dude, thanks for doing the show, bro.
Yeah, thank you very much. Nice meeting you, man. Take care.
All right, everybody. See you in the funny pages.
Bye-bye.
Veterans with Benefits is 100% organic and cruelty-free. The show is produced by Low Cash Productions, written and directed by Roland Spurbeck. If you or anyone you know is in crisis, please call the Veteran Crisis Line at 855-521-1317.